This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a dark comedy on modern surveillance, songs of hope from World War II, or a second-line dance, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. A new comedy from Second Star Performance Collective makes its debut at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts. Ross Peter Nelson's Becoming Number Six hones in on the surveillance state, metadata, and internet dating. Director Harold Gervais joins us. Welcome.
Hello, Diane.
Becoming Number Six. Is this a game of numbers, internet espionage, and comedy maybe rolled into one?
All of the above. It really addresses directly just how much of our life is being watched, literally. The things that we put out there on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, you know, that's all public knowledge. And there are organizations that take that data and mine it and look for patterns and figure out what we're doing and where we're going and when we're doing it and who we're doing it with. It's really scary. And yet the play is a comedy. It's got a really strong family dynamic. You've got a widow and her young son, who is kind of this computer genius hacker. And she has a best friend, and the son comes to the attention of this organization known as the Division, mining the data that we all put out there. And they're looking for a person called Incognito, which is basically anonymous. And it kind of goes through the family dynamic, and you kind of learn things about people that you didn't know before. It's a really funny play, but it's about really serious stuff, how the government is watching you. I was reading somewhere recently, you know, like if you travel to London, the average person in London is captured on CCTV every 47 seconds.
And this is closed circuit TV?
It's closed circuit TV, you know, and we kind of incorporate that into the show. There's a working closed circuit camera in the theater that is following the action both in the audience and on the stage and projecting it onto a screen.
Now, the playwright, Ross Peter Nelson.
He was based locally. This play was actually his thesis project here at UNO and was premiered in a reading, I think, 2 years ago. And we're working on about the fifth draft of the show. And it just gets better.
The title, Becoming Number Six, does it have a double meaning?
It's definitely an allusion to the prisoner. Patrick McGowan's the prisoner. If you know numerology at all, six translates to freedom in numerology. And one of the running themes through the play is that information wants to be free, that the government wants to hoard information and keep it secret. And these organizations such as Anonymous or in the context of our play Incognito want to free the information so that everybody knows what the information is. You know, we make allusions to WikiLeaks during the pre-shows. We play those hacked emails, voicemails that WikiLeaks let loose over the summer. And it's really kind of remarkable to listen to people's cell phone conversations that are, you know, initially really mundane and, you know, mundane. And then you get this little golden nugget of something that people didn't think anyone else would ever hear. And it just gives you pause.
Seems to me it's becoming harder and harder these days to remain anonymous.
I don't think any of us are anonymous anymore. I think that would be a full-time job. And I don't know how you'd get paid or where you'd have to live, but it's, you know, if you've got a cell phone, if you're on the computer, if you walk in the streets, people know you're there. We live in interesting times.
What was most challenging for you?
Definitely the technical end of it, incorporating live video, a lot of sound, and just trying to make it so it's that experience where you feel kind of immersive into the world of what we're trying to deal with.
It's an interactive work with the audience?
Yes. The fourth wall is definitely broken. In several instances, characters are out amongst the audience, characters are addressing the audience, audience is on camera and on stage.
So the audience is under surveillance also?
The audience is definitely under surveillance. We are watching you. They are watching us, and we are watching you.
Who's in the production?
We have a really talented cast. We have Donald Lewis. Donald and I did our first show together in 1986, so it's our first show in 30 years.
Wow.
We have Ross Quinn, who's a student, a senior at NOCA, so it's intergenerational. Rebecca Hollingsworth, who was just in Dyke Bar that just closed a couple weeks ago at Theater in St. Claude. Andrea Watson, Lillian Small, who is Serafina and Rose Tattoo, and Andrew Good. So it's a really talented, funny cast, and they play together really well in a really engaging way.
You must be quite proud as Second Star Performance Collective is growing legs in the community.
I think we're developing a reputation, and it's actually a good one. You know, we've been at it for almost 5 years now, between the fall show that we do, and we also do the Two for Tennessee, the original one acts, which will be our third year doing it this year. We believe in New Orleans. We believe in the theater community in New Orleans, and we believe in the writers that are working in New Orleans. They're just really talented, and they deserve to have their voices heard. And if we can help with that, then that's what we're here for.
What will audiences remember most from this experience?
They are being watched. Always. They are being watched. And it's kind of creepy. And hopefully funny.
Second Star director Harold Gervais, thanks.
No, thank you, Diane.
Second Star Performance Collective presents Becoming Number 6 by Ross Peter Nelson. It opens tomorrow in the NIMS Black Box Theater at Anoka, 2800 Charter Street. Performances run through November 5th. We travel back in time now as Russian culture comes alive in Moscow Knight's latest theater production, Longing for Peace and Home in the Songs of the Second World War. International singers will perform works and skits that were popular in Eastern Europe and Russia during the 1940s. The musical production highlights songs seldom heard outside the former Soviet Union. Joining me is Moscow Knight's artistic director, actress, and singer, Natasha Raymer. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is quite a different program for New Orleans audiences. Why did you decide to take a trip back to wartime in your latest production?
You know that we have a wonderful museum in New Orleans, the Second War Museum. And I went for some show in the museum. It's a wonderful show. But it's American song, Western songs, like Marlene Dietrich perform. And I decided, why I can introduce New Orleans audience with our beautiful Russian songs, which were created, you know, during the Second War, because war in Russia started 1941 and finished in 1945. And during this period, we had 100 unbelievable songs. Then I thought about Jewish songs, because Russian Jewish population suffering in Belarus, Ukraine, Baltic area, they had the same Holocaust. More than 2 million Jewish people were killed in the former Soviet Union territory. And I decided that we need to bring Jewish songs, which were created in Heta during partisan movement in Belarus, in Lithuania. So this is my idea.
Who are the international stars coming in to sing these songs?
I invited the famous Teresa Tova. She's a great singer. She's an expert of Jewish songs. Her mother was in partisan in Poland. She was a young girl and she went to the forest. She hide and she resist. And Aelita, she grew up in Latvia, and I grew up in very close in Lithuania. So we could share the same experience because we used to know Jewish songs and Russian songs. So I invite her and myself, Natasha. So we have three women who wants to present desperately and to share these beautiful words and lovely music. Also, Boris Fogel, a master piano performer, he's from Moscow. Now he lives in Boston. And Vadim Kolpakov, our international virtuoso seven-string guitar player. This is his second time he's coming. And guess what? I grabbed John Joyce, our history music professor and our wonderful percussionist, jazz percussionist, and he will be with us.
And let's talk about the songs that will be performed.
We will start with songs called Zemlyanka, Russian songs. I will sing Temnaya Noch, The Dark Night. It's also written from the front. You know, man writes like a letter. It's a dark night, a ballad whispering over the grassland. And I know you're awake. I know you don't sleep. I know you crying and you miss me and I miss you. But I know, I believe in you, my love, my friend. I believe my faith protect me from the bullets in the dark nights.
These are very moving songs.
It's a moving, very moving. And we have quite selection of the Jewish songs, which were created in the ghetto, especially, and also in partisan resistance, you know.
The resistance camps,
yes. They trying to fight, resist. Among them, it was a lot of very talented people, Jewish people, so they create songs. It's also heartbreaking songs. Teresa will perform Under Your White Starry Heaven.
Hinter deine weiße Stirn streck zu mir dein weiße Hand. Meine Werte sennen Tränen, vielen Ruhen in dein Hand.
Under your white starry heaven, touch me with your pure white hand. All my words are flowing teardrops, lay to rest within your hand. See the twinkle very faintly from the dismal cellar view, and I crave a peaceful corner to reflect them back to you.
This is a prayer to God.
Yeah. My dear God, I'd gladly grant you every single thing I own. There's a fire deep inside me. All around the flames have grown.
Now you have one song that involves a teacher and a child.
It's a wonderful song which Elita perform in Yiddish. It's a very famous song and very kind. 1,100,000 children were killed during the Second War. Imagine during the ghetto time, the children sitting, but they try to keep and pretend that this is normal life. And they say, listen, children, please and learn. Listen, it's so important that you learn the Yiddish Jewish alphabet. It's very touching.
What made you choose these particular works for this production?
My passion to music, my grandmother, who spent about 4 years in the ghetto. And, you know, she told me many stories. And I grew up when I was a little girl. And my mom brought me to Shargorod in Ukraine, where almost about 100 Jewish survived. It's a miracle. And my grandmother, you know, showed me everything around. And when I grew up, I understood more and more what happened during the Second War. This team is very close to me. So almost every song will go with slides of the Second War and translation of the song. Because we decided we will sing native languages, you know, how the song was created. But people will see translation. So they will see images and they hear the music and see performance and musician together. I think it's complete all the picture. And why I'm doing this? Because I want to share my experience, and to bring this wonderful performance in town.
What is your hope as you bring this rare experience to local audiences?
The message is, please, people, think, don't fight with one another. We have very short time in this earth. Why are we killing one another? Why are we hating one another? We have precious time which God gave to us.
Moscow Nights Artistic Director Natasha Raymer, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diana, for inviting me. I appreciate very much.
Oy, wenn Pripetschig brennt a fire und in Stub is heiß.
Moscow Nights presents Longing for Peace and Home in the Songs of the Second World War. Performances are Thursday at Gates of Prayer Synagogue in Metairie, and Friday and Saturday at the Marigny Opera House. More info at MoscowNightsUS.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Now, we turn to the rhythm of the Crescent City as a second line heads for the Ashe Powerhouse Theater this weekend. Homegrown choreographer, dancer, and educator Michelle Gibson hopes you'll have your umbrellas ready for the New Orleans premiere of her latest stage performance, Taking It to the Roots. Michelle Gibson joins us by phone from Dallas. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, thank you for having me.
There is excitement in the air as you return home. Tell us about the inspiration for this performance.
It spun from me working on my master's, my MFA degree with Hollins University in the American Dance Festival when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to present for my MFA thesis. I wanted to investigate the dance of New Orleans, what New Orleans brings to the table as far as dance and academics. So I thought about second line, growing up in New Orleans. You know, we grow up and we do it every day. You know, we don't learn it in a studio. It's just something you learn growing up. And so I was like, you know what, this is the best time for me to really sit back and look at this artistically and share what second line is as a lifestyle, not just as a dance, but as a lifestyle in my work.
So can you explain more about how second line is a way of life?
It's what we call in graduate studies a phenomenology, which is a lived experience. We look at culture as a lived experience and how people live it every day versus being something they're taught to do. It's something that's just innate in them. It's part of their heritage. Of course, you know, people get excited about seeing it, watching the footwork and watching how people react to the brass instruments, but it's something deeper than that. It's something that we call this ancestral memory, where movement happens in the body as an impulse of spirit. And so that's how I'm looking at this thing that I call my second line aesthetic, looking at the impulse of the movement.
So you're exploring dances of the African diaspora?
Yeah, you know, when you think about Congo Square and the conjuring of all the different shades of brown people that were in Congo Square that didn't speak the same verbal language, but the two things they had in common was the rhythm and the dance. That's that ancestral impulse that hits us in second line. Because if you watch the footwork is so inspired by Senegambian footwork, by Haitian footwork, by the Congolese hips when they move. All of those things are a part of the second line idea and the aesthetic, but we don't talk about it as New Orleanians because we live it every day, and that's the lived experience of it. But me being in academia now and being a professor and touring and lecturing and teaching this, I now have to language this for academics. You have to create a language for it. So that's kind of what I'm doing, and I feel like being from New Orleans, I should be an ambassador for my own culture in that element, in that area.
You are a New Orleans native living in Dallas. Tell us your story.
Hurricane Katrina is what shifted me to Dallas. After Katrina, I took a year off. My son was born on August 20th. So I had a newborn baby prior to Katrina happening, and my daughter was 6 at the time. And so all of that was going on when Katrina was happening, and, you know, we lost everything, and so I was shifted to this unknown place, and it took me a year for me to really get back into my art and get back to my normal life, you know, after that happened. But since I've been here in Dallas, it's been a blessing. When I came here, a door was opened to me by a lady named Vicki Meek, who at the time was the curator of the South Dallas Culture Center, and gave me a new space, a new venue to continue my artistic journey. And I am indeed grateful. And that's what kind of just got me back into it after Katrina.
Now, what will audiences experience in this new work?
This new work, which has been in process for 3 years, the work was funded and supported by MPN, which is the National Performance Network Creation Fund Grant. MPN supported me in creating this work. And I have two collaborators with MPN, the South Dallas Culture Center and the Ashe Culture Center. So those were my supports for this work even happening. The work itself is about the impulse of this idea of what Second Line is for New Orleanians. And so I kind of take people on a journey, kind of a personal journey, about where it fits and how it fits in my body and in my life and how I execute it for myself. So growing up a preacher's daughter in the A&E church, you know, my father, he wasn't trying to hear me going to Second Line, you know, and all that type of stuff. So movement for me, I feel like my Second Line started for me in the church. Because, you know, in church, when the spirit hits somebody, the body moves, the impulse goes, and there go the footwork. There go the body thrusting from side to side. And so for me, in church is where Second Line kind of started, the idea. So in the show, I kind of give reference to my religious background, my spiritual background, as it connects to this idea of this improvisational field of Second Line. And then I take you on another journey with ancestral energy and spirit that I recognize in the work. And his name is Herbert Leonard Gettrich, who is the great-grandfather of my son, Nigel. And he was one of the members of the Young Men Olympia, the Benevolent Association. And while I was working on my MFA thesis, I had the wonderful opportunity of sitting with Papa Gettrich and hearing his story as being a member of this very prestigious organization. So in the show, I have two ancestral spirits that carry me through my journey of this Second Line aesthetic, which is my father, the late Reverend D.A. Gibson, and the late Herbert Leonard Gettrich. So I kind of just take you on the spin, looking at New Orleans and all the different aspects of dance and history and music and culture that embody what Second Line really is. For me, well, what I think Second Line is, and I hope that the audience, hopefully they will embrace and understand where it is that I'm trying to go with it. Because I've had people have conversations with me, and they're like, well, Michelle, how are you going to, hold on, Second Line? Nobody don't teach Second Line. Like, what you think you're doing? Like, how you going to do this? Well, that's when the artistic mind comes into play, and, you know, you start to think about concepts and ideas and theories to explain what something is. And I think when it deals with culture, you really have to dive into the nuances that help support how something survives and how something lives. So that's kind of what taking it to the roots is. It's a journey. It's an exploration. It's an enlightenment of this culture, my culture.
Dancer, choreographer, Michelle Gibson, thanks so much.
Thank you so, so much. I appreciate it.
Michelle Gibson's dance performance, Taking It to the Roots, hits the stage Friday and Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at the Ashe Powerhouse Theater, 1731 Barone Street. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.